This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Pick any moment from the endless presidential campaign that has finally ended, and you can find references to the status of women in America. Sometimes the discussion of gender politics was in the background, and sometimes it was front and center. You could even say explicit. The Access Hollywood tape jumps out immediately, but there were plenty of other moments, like these.
Well, if fighting for women's health care and paid family leave and equal pay is playing the woman card, then deal me in!
Your Twitter account has several disparaging comments about women's looks. You once told a contestant on Celebrity Apprentice it would be a pretty picture to see her on her knees. Does that sound to you like the temperament of a man we should elect as president? And how will you answer the charge from Hillary Clinton, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee, that you are part of the war on women?
I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct.
Just remember, there's a special place in hell for women who don't help each other.
That was Hillary Clinton on Pennsylvania primary night, Donald Trump in a debate moderated by Megyn Kelly of Fox News, and former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright speaking for Clinton in New Hampshire last winter. These moments and others left a lot of women, regardless of party affiliation, and a lot of men for that matter, thinking about gender politics and their own personal experiences in a new light. Here at Vermont Edition, we've been having these conversations ourselves, hearing our friends and families discuss gender issues, and overhearing them at bars and coffee shops and on social media. There are conversations happening around a lot of different identities right now, but today we're going to focus on what it's like to be a woman, a Vermont woman, in this cultural moment. We've invited a group of dynamic, diverse, and interesting women to share their perspectives today. But before I introduce them, I want to say that we're really hoping you will participate too. You can email us, vermontedition@vpr.net. You can tweet at Vermont Edition or call 1-800-639-2211. Our number again, 1-800-639-2211. Tell us what you're thinking, experiencing. Imagine you're pulling a chair up and grabbing a mug of your favorite coffee, tea, kombucha, beer, water, whatever it is, and joining a conversation among friends. Friends who might not always agree with you, but who are interested in hearing what you have to say. That goes for all of you, not just women. Again, call 1-800-639-2211. Let me introduce our studio guests for this hour. Jessamine West is a librarian and advocate. Jessamine, nice to talk to you again.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hayden Cleverly is a senior at the University of Vermont. Hi, Hayden.
Hi, thank you.
Nikki Fuller is Director of Equity Affairs for Burlington Schools. Nikki, it's a pleasure.
Hi, thank you.
Amy Small is the rabbi at Ojave Zedek Synagogue in Burlington. Nice to have you back, Rabbi
Hi,
Small.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
And Diane Snelling is a longtime Vermont state senator who will not be returning to Montpelier in January. Nice to have you back with
Thank
us.
Thank you.
So I've heard this sentiment expressed a lot, that the country is far more X, fill in the blank, far more something than I thought. People keep saying that. Given that today we're talking about what it's like to be a woman right now, can you respond to the idea that this election showed me this country is far more sexist than I realized? I see you nodding, Rabbi Small.
Yeah, I was recently reflecting with a group at the congregation. We were talking about the state of things in this country. That I've been a rabbi for almost 30 years, and when I started in rabbinical school in 1982, it was a struggle for women. And when I started in my career, it certainly wasn't clear what the role of women would be. But I felt like I was done with that. And I frankly thought we were done with it. I wanted to focus what I'm doing in my work and not on my gender. And this was a wake-up call. It felt like there's still a lot of work to be done.
It was a wake-up call? I mean, had you really not been experiencing the things that you did during this election?
Yes, I would say that. There certainly have been times when I felt, oh, that happened because I'm a woman. But I just dismiss it. That's just what happens, and it'll get better with time. But it didn't.
Who else? What are you thinking about here, this idea that maybe the country is more sexist than you had thought?
I think part of it has to come from any time you have a woman candidate for president. And I was just on the drive over here. I was saying to myself, by the way, this is Diane. I was saying to myself, wouldn't it be great if we get to where we have the candidate from either party, they're both women. And then what kind of conversation would we have? But I think
we could have had that had Carly Fiorina been the candidate for the Republicans.
But I really do hope we get there soon, because I think this is another step in the evolution of where does the prejudice come from that a woman can and can't do certain things. And we certainly had some interesting perspectives on that this campaign.
Well, tell me what you were hearing. I mean, when you think of that, interesting perspectives, is that a code?
Maybe it was trying to be diplomatic, Jane. I don't know. I'm just saying I think that we heard a lot of things in the campaign that I never would have expected to hear in a campaign. You know, they weren't issues. They were personal, you know, trying to line up sort of personality defaults or something, flaws. And somehow, in many cases, it sounded like it's a flaw to be female, you know, in the scheme of presidential politics. And I think that was calculated in many ways. I also think that if you're not, as a woman, if you're not aware of how sexist things still are, then you're in a little bit of denial. You know, while things have improved enormously, we will always need to be vigilant about the progress we've made and about further progress, and like, you know, dollar for dollar, same earnings and things like that.
Well, I think that's a really good point, Diane. This is Jessamine. One of the things that really surprised me was how much the conversational breakdown in the campaign had to do with, again, sort of highly personal issues. And I felt like that's kind of the gambit of somebody who can't work on their record. I mean, you know, Clinton had a record that was strong, although it was also public. So people could say, well, you voted this way about this, or you did this specific thing, or blah, 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 which was not the same as her opponent. And so I think they, you know, kind of ripped her apart based on sort of what they perceived to be gender essentialism, which for whatever reason resonated with the base that elected him. But from a were you surprised perspective, like, I'm a woman that works in tech, and it's a really hard place to be, not because, I mean, because there's always these conversations, people are really trying to be conscious and do the right thing. But you get to a level where you're like, am I being asked to take the notes at this meeting because I'm female or just because it's my turn? And, you know, I'm still not comfortable with the answer to that question. And I, you know, I live in a rural community where there's a lot of, you know, sort of typical gender roles. And I was not so surprised. I was hopeful, but not as surprised.
We got a note from a listener named Jill who said, I'm really glad every time this topic is addressed in media. I graduated from college in 2008 and entered a male-dominated work zone, much like Jessamine. Jill says, I was completely unprepared for the level of sexism I confronted. At that time, it felt like a male with a high school degree was equal to a woman with a master's. It has gotten better since then. I really wish someone in college had taught me that sexism was still a thing. Just before graduating, the department had a special meeting for every senior in our major, and the department head departed his wisdom on us. A few years later, I wrote to him and asked him to add to his speech that though women are equal or more often speaking up in class, that's not what will be considered acceptable in an office meeting. Nikki, where do you come in on this conversation?
Actually, I was thinking about what...
Amy.
Amy. Sorry. You didn't turn your paper on. What I was thinking about was her feelings that we were done with this. And the fact that I never felt we were done with it. And for me, as an African-American woman, I think the reason I could never feel like we were done with it is I can't separate that part of me. I can't separate myself, my Black self, from my woman self. And so because race issues and sexism issues have been a part of the American, you know, conversation for so long, I never felt that I was done with that, because every time there was an affront, I had to decide whether it was because I was a woman or because they were looking at a Black woman. And so that, I think, kept me from ever feeling like I was done with this. Even though there was much progress, I never felt like I could ever say, well, I'm done with this, because I was always having to question, what was that about? Was it because I was a woman, or was it because I was an African-American woman? And so, and in this particular election, I saw both of those. I saw the sexism and the racism. So they left me quite fearful and anxious about what I knew was going on and whether it was much worse than I knew. And I would say I think it is much worse than I knew.
So even you, who you say, you know, you never felt like this was done or that racism and sexism come as a surprise, even for you, this feels worse than you thought.
It feels worse, much worse than I thought.
Why?
I think it felt much worse because what it did was it made me realize that there were all of these people around me that I made assumptions about our relationships. And I'm not suggesting that a single election changed all of my relationships. But what I am suggesting is it made me question, wow, I thought I knew this particular group or this person. And given the racist and sexist rhetoric, wouldn't even imagine that that many people that I knew would vote for someone who espoused to those views. And so that was sort of shocking. And it made me have to really question, and I'm still questioning, and I think I will be for a while, and sort of engaging in those conversations. What about this election made it okay for these types of conversations to be going on and my friends to think they were acceptable conversations?
I want to get Hayden, you into the conversation here, because I want to hear your voice, especially as a young woman, a woman in college, thinking about this election. But let me just bring Ray into the conversation here before we do. Ray's calling in from Charlotte. Hi, Ray. Go right ahead.
Hi. I was calling to comment on what specifically you're talking about. You know, it's 9 years ago when Hillary was against Barack Obama. I had been teaching in public schools in New York and in New Orleans for, you know, 6 years or so, and was in my mid-20s. And I was thinking to myself, you know, sexism isn't even real in this country, but racism is so alive and well, there's no way that a black man is going to be able to be on this ticket. And I was pleasantly surprised that he was. But now, as a woman in my mid-30s, I think that I've lost some of that illusion of power that young women sometimes feel, trading on sort of an attraction that you're walking around the world with. And now as a mother and as a boss and as a wife and as a woman that's a little bit older, I feel much more aware of sexism on a daily basis. I would also just say that part of why it feels so personal in response to that last question is because of many women have been sexually assaulted, and I think after this Access Hollywood thing, it almost felt like you were telling your whole family, you know, that I've been abused, and the entire family is saying, "Oh, who cares?" And I think that I felt that on a nationwide feeling, like the whole country is saying, "It doesn't matter that a dozen women came forward and said that Trump did this," and that's why it felt so incredibly visceral.
We're all nodding in the studio here, yeah, as you say that.
Ray, thanks for your comments. I really appreciate that. Hayden, jump in. Tell us what you're thinking about.
I think this election revealed a lot about sexism. I don't think that sexism was the primary cause of Hillary's loss. I think there's poli-sci models that would have predicted this without any information about either candidate. Just it's very, very rare for one party to hold on to the White House for 3 terms in a row. What I did think it revealed was just how deep-rooted that sexism is, and that I think it influences perception and judgment in ways that we're not fully aware of. And that's something we need to be really conscious of. I think what was most shocking for me, and I think it's going to be a challenge for gender equality in the future, is that there's women who are okay with those sexist views. There's women who passed around the hashtag repeal the 19th, who said they didn't see Hillary as fit to be president because she was a woman. And I think it's going to be really difficult to change public perception on a broad scale when there are still women who believe that.
Well, and I think that goes to what Nikki was talking about, really, is that a lot of people were like, what percentage of white women voted for the Republican candidate? Like, that's very surprising. And I think the kind of feminism that Hillary is espousing, which I think is useful and utilitarian, didn't have as much of that sort of intersectional vibe that I've been hoping to see. And I see much more from younger feminists, where it's like, we need to look at feminism and how it overlaps with race issues, gender issues, religious issues, et cetera, so that we can bring everybody under. I mean, you know, you talk about a big tent and you seem to feel it means cultural diversity. But I think it also means that you don't, how do you prioritize what you go for? And clearly there was a bunch of women, white women especially, who prioritized very differently than what I was expecting. And, you know, clearly I think what other people were expecting as well.
You know, I don't pretend to know all of your politics on this panel, but I also want to invite listeners who voted for Donald Trump. You know, there's a sort of seems to be a shared assumption in this room or among our panelists about Donald Trump. And I'm curious, you know, for those of you women who did vote for him in Vermont, what you're feeling and what you're thinking and what's being reflected back to you and why you perhaps voted for Donald Trump. What about the comments that we heard in the Access Hollywood tape? And where do you put that then in your hierarchy of how you decide to vote? Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Rabbi Small, I saw you jumping in.
Right. I realized that the denial I've been living with was self-imposed because feminism in the 70s and the 80s was a battle we had to invest our energy in winning. And I wanted to do other things. And so I didn't want to think about that. And truly, for me, my experience was that feminism and the equality of women was a cause in and of itself. And I hear what you're talking about in thinking about the various issues, Jessamine, as they go together. But I think for me, that was the awakening. And frankly, I thought that once we'd sort of waged the battle for women to enter halls of power and authority and the workforce in many important positions, that it would evolve to completion at a certain point. And that's a bubble that I had created for myself, and I think many of us had. So what's troubling is that this is shared across gender lines, men and women who don't see this as a problem. When I heard you speaking about this, Hayden, I was thinking about how, especially early in my career, some of the most difficult exchanges I had where I felt this is happening because I'm a woman were with women who were threatened by the role that I had assumed that they didn't understand and couldn't assume.
We actually got a question about that from Mary Claire, who says, I felt sad when I realized how both Hillary Clinton and Sue Minter were held to different standards, even by other women. My question to your panel is why women often treat other women so badly, particularly if they are public figures. Diane Snelling, you've been in politics for a long time. What do you think about that?
I don't have the answer.
Does it resonate? Do you think women treat other women badly?
I do, and I think that's very much part and parcel of exactly what we're talking about, is how those perceptions are formed about what the expectations are. I was going back to the just understanding how much can be injected into the word she versus the word he, and that was something that I kept hearing, which was that the tone of voice implied that she was less. And, you know, I'm not articulating exactly what I'm trying to say, except that that was a constant that wasn't part of a particular issue. It was just always there underground, sort of, you know, percolating. But I will say, you know, politics is hard. And we have entered an age where anything goes. And I think for me personally, what I got out of this particular election is we're not going back. So if anything goes, who has the responsibility to make sure that candidates are tough enough to stand up to the kind of scrutiny, the kind of attack that is now common in politics, and how do we get the best people to run if that's the field? You know, who wants to subject themselves to that? Why would you? And how do you maintain your notion of making things better, since that's what most people want to change when they get into politics? How do I make a better life for myself, my family, my friends and neighbors? And how do I take all of that expectation and knowledge of how to get things done and make it be calm, I guess. How do you calm that down and so you can get to the issue and make a solution?
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. We're talking with a diverse group of women today about how the last few months have crystallized conversations around gender. Obviously, conversations are happening around a lot of identities at the moment. But, you know, we're going to talk today about what it's like to be a woman. We've gathered a group of smart and engaged women in our communities to basically just have a discussion about what they're thinking, doing, saying, feeling, and we are listening in. Also participating, that's your job today. Whether you identify as a woman or not, a feminist or not, a Republican, Democrat, independent, other, where do you intersect this conversation? And what voices do you feel like you're not hearing today? Maybe it feels different to be a working class woman in Vermont. Share your perspective. Call us, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. We're talking today with Jessamine West, a librarian and advocate, Rabbi Amy Small of Ojave Zedek Synagogue in Burlington, Nikki Fuller, Director of Equity Affairs excuse me, for the Burlington Schools, Diane Snelling, a longtime Vermont State Senator, and Hayden Cleverly, a senior at the University of Vermont. And we got a note from Shar who says, since the election, I have felt defeated, hopeless, frustrated, silenced, unsafe, invalidated, and mostly tired. I'm tired because I feel sometimes like I'm screaming and no one can hear me. I know that sounds cliched, but being a woman every day before the election was starting to feel this way. I have statistics like 1 in 3 women are sexually assaulted and over 1,600 women a year are murdered by men. And the literally unbelievable less than 5% of rapes ever get convictions, let alone go to trial, memorized. And I recite them like a broken record. And over again, I'm met with resistance to my credibility. Why is it so hard for society to believe a woman? And why is it unbelievably harder for them to believe several women saying the same thing? I'm tired of strangers finding reason to be too close to me or touch me in an area with lots of space. I'm tired of young lady and sweetheart, listen, and old men winking at me. I'm tired of can I get a hug after meeting 10 minutes prior. I'm tired of being told not to dwell on it or that I'm overreacting. These are microaggressions, small acts of belittling and condescension meant to put me down and feel lesser. Shar goes on but ends her comments with this. The morning after the election, I was at Feldman's Bagels in Burlington getting coffee when 2 young women asked me how I was. They had no way of knowing the heartbreak that was happening inside since I gave no outward sign of it. They were asking solely out of, I'd imagine, the same feeling of helplessness I was feeling. I made a joke about it and we all laughed. They offered up a hug, too, in fact. This is what I'm here for and will continue to be here for. Women in solidarity, women supporting and empowering other women. So that's Shar writing in. Hayden Cleverly, what are you thinking?
I think I was kind of rattled by how comfortable we are with the lewd language that Trump used. And I guess being unable to connect that to rape culture and sexual assault and other major issues we're seeing. There are so many people who kind of just dismissed it as locker room talk or he's just saying mean things. And it made me really angry because I'm like, those aren't just mean things. Like, those are values. He's holding certain values and expressing certain values. And to have that as the face of our country and, you know, kids at home who see that, not only women but men or girls and boys, I think that has a big impact. And whether or not it's direct and you can realize it instantly, I think it does shape people growing up, and it's a big deal.
One of the things about that, too, was not just what he said, but the afterwards where Billy Bush is like, hey, give this guy a hug. They've just been objectifying her inside the bus.
You're talking about the Access Hollywood tape.
Access Hollywood tape. And then she walks up they've been having this gross conversation, and then she walks up and he basically kind of says, you know, let this guy touch you after I know what he said. When you talk about rape culture, this is Jessamine, by the way, that's the thing. That was the thing that was so chilling to me. Not like, whatever, he said this gross thing. But then the two of them kind of tag teamed up to like make it grosser for everybody, for them, for their own private thing. And that was where I was like, this is the thing that's really insipid. Everybody knows the words are not cool, whether or not you think you can get away with them. But a lot of that other stuff doesn't see the light of day, and people aren't talking about it in exactly the same way.
I was going to say, I think it would be interesting at this particular point to go back to the clip that you ran at the beginning of the show of Trump talking about the problem with the country is we'd become too politically correct. And I guess, you know, I understand over a number of years, people expressing this, you know, it's so difficult to be politically correct and it's such a hassle and everything. But the long and short of it is not being politically correct is really being rude and beyond. And that's kind of was the monster that got let loose was we don't need to try. And we do need to. We do need to make our culture responsive to everybody's sensitivities and to our own in order to make it better. Otherwise, we're just constantly trampling on people's sense of self.
Well, and that's what makes it America. I mean, Nikki, you must deal with this at your job frequently, right? Trying to be like, we've got a lot of different kinds of people here.
Oh, absolutely. We do have lots of different people.
Because, again, Nikki, you're director of equity affairs at
HR
the Burlington
and
School.
Equity affairs. Uh-huh. So I deal with HR and equity affairs. So that's all employees.
Yeah.
And I would say you're absolutely correct. And it doesn't, I guess the term politically correct just has too many connotations to it. I just see it as being us being caring for each other. So if I have an employee who, whatever their issue is, I want to address them appropriately, whether or a student or whatever the case may be, a parent. The reality is I'm trying to address them in the most appropriate way, in a caring way. And so the political correctness, I don't like the term because basically
it implies falsehood.
Right. And
it's already let people define the argument, kind of.
Right. It immediately allows them to do that. And the reality is that if somebody's complaining that they want equal pay, that's a right. That's not political correctness. If somebody's complaining that they've been harassed or discriminated against, you know, that's against the law. It's not about political correctness. And so that piece does concern me. But if I could, mm-hmm. I would like to sort of respond to your question a little bit ago with regard to whether women treat women worse. I'm not sure that women necessarily are worse. I just think they're a product of a society that's filled with all kinds of isms. And if you're a product of that, you have to be really aware of your isms and your own unconscious bias. And I think because I do so much work around unconscious bias, we often don't talk about unconscious bias around sexism and about women. We very often focus more on race, you know, gay rights, other issues, and we don't talk about women in particular. But I think we need to, because we are just as subject to those unconscious bias, because we just earlier were having a conversation how we immediately will get pink clothes for our daughter and blue clothes for our son. These are all ingrained in us, and they come out at times that we don't expect. And you need to be aware of them.
You know, Nikki, that was the part for me that was most surprising about this whole conversation that was happening in the United States was my own misunderstanding of my own experiences. So, right. You know, Jessamine, you were talking about the Access Hollywood tape, and Hayden, you were talking about rape culture. And I remember thinking when women started posting on social media or talking about their own experiences with sexual assault, I can remember thinking, oh, my gosh, there are so many women who've experienced this, as if I hadn't. And then thinking about my own life and my own experiences and remembering things, you know, sort of coming back to me like, oh, my God, yeah, there was this time, you know, a boy held me down and said, you know, we were in a dark space. And he said, you know, you can't get up unless I let you up. I'm stronger than you and I can do what I want. You know, and remembering those moments and thinking, why doesn't it occur to me that maybe not reportable, maybe not criminal, but that that's a form of sexual assault and a form of a power dynamic that I hadn't even been realizing that had happened to me, or it didn't occur to me in the context of our culture. Like, oh, right. This is something that we've all experienced, including me. I don't know, Hayden, if you had conversations like that at college as well.
Yeah, I think what I've been thinking about lately, too, is having to suppress part of your character or personality in order to be taken seriously in certain settings. I think, you know, I'm still in college, but trying to decide a career path, I felt like choosing one, I would have to sacrifice other parts of myself. If I wanted to pursue politics or law, I would have to give up this creative, goofy side of myself.
No, you don't.
Okay, that's good to hear. That's relieving. And I think, well, good to know now, but I think we also saw that a little bit with Hillary. Is she was criticized for being cold and aloof and unemotional, but that's she had to become kind of hardened in order to navigate a male-dominated field for 30 years. And especially in the debates where I think there was just kind of a double standard where Trump was interrupting her continuously and she was respectfully waiting when he would speak. And if she had done what he was doing, I would have been very interested to see the reaction, because I think
she should have.
She was expected to be a good girl, to smile, to use a pleasant tone of voice, and to play by the rules. And that's definitely a bias that we have internalized as women all too much. And I think that the business of political correctness strikes me as flowing not out of this election season per se, but out of Facebook culture, to be quite honest. I mean, when I think about our media culture, the movies and the television shows that kids watch today, and how that morphed into the way people express themselves on social media, people feel license to express what we would call not politically correct, where polite society is breaking down. And I think we need to address it from that perspective, not just from the leaders and what they say, but from what we engage with as a society and as a culture and as friends and as a community, one-on-one.
Well, and I think they always did that. They just didn't have a platform where the rest of us could watch them perform.
That's right. That.
In fact, I feel like social media, this is Jessamine again, has highlighted the fact that people are having those conversations, and they've become emboldened because of some of the mob culture that technology affords people able to do. I mean, watching what Twitter has made decisions about dealing with the conservative right and maybe some of the Facebook algorithms that they didn't change before the election because they may have angered the conservative right is very interesting, watching them simultaneously take responsibility for Arab Spring and not take responsibility for prioritizing certain conversations at the expense of others. I feel like people were always talking that way. We can just now watch them, and it turns out it's creepy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking with a group of really smart women from Vermont from different walks of life about what they're chewing over when it comes to being a woman in the world right now. And we're hearing from many of you. You can share your thoughts, your experiences, your frustrations. What voice is missing from this conversation? Maybe it's yours. Call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. You can also tweet at Vermont Edition. Jill says, I can't believe that everyone who voted for Trump is actually sexist. I know that many Trump-supporting women work outside the home and want to earn the same wage that men do, for example. I wonder if women's rights, like minority rights, like the environment, etc., have all been lumped together as politically correct positions, which these people feel somehow suppressed by. It's a real shame, but I am just trying to understand a little bit more about where they might be coming from. Andrew says, my wife has disowned our son, who voted for Trump. Overreaction? And let's go to Leslie, calling in from Sunderland. Hi, Leslie, go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to follow up on what Nikki was talking about unconscious bias, and I'd be interested to get other people's take on it. But when I heard Tim Kaine and President Obama after, sort of responding to Hillary's loss, they both talked about being proud of her. And it struck me as, not something that if she had been a man, that they would have said that they were proud of her, that she had, you know, as if it was sort of, you know, something, a surprise that she would have done as well as she did. And, you know, that, you know, I certainly don't think of President Obama as a sexist man, but I think it's kind of an example of how being raised in a sexist culture and a racist culture, that those kinds of things are just so ingrained. And I don't know that I, you know, the couple of people that I talked to about it, but, well, I wonder, you know, whether that was, you know, whether there was some unconscious sexism in there. And I was just curious to see if anybody had a similar reaction.
Thanks. Yeah, Leslie, thanks for your comments and you know, the sort of underlying meaning of words and how they're then perceived by the people who are hearing them. That's interesting. Let's get to that. Let's also hear, though, first from Michelle, who's calling in from Montreal. Hi, Michelle. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to tell you I listened to your program a lot, and I really respect the opinion of a lot of the women who spoke today. I was the first deputy mayor of Montreal in 1994. I was a single-issue politician. My issue was child support. I had worked with ACEs in the United States to promote withholding at source, which resulted in a law in 1995 which was enacted and applied and saved billions of dollars in social welfare, legal aid, and social housing costs. And it was because I worked with so many women. When I became elected, I was restricted because I was given a position, which limited my choice of agenda. But I did work on my single issue, which was financial autonomy and security for women, but also public security in terms of women. And I worked on a file, which was a pedophile file. We arrested a gentleman for 26 to life. My problem then, and I think the problem that we have now, is that we are trying to spread ourselves too thin. We're getting discouraged too easily. We need to build an army of women, each with our own issue that we say in French, bénévole and bénévole. When you're crazy about an issue, you'll do anything and everything. We will not make it if we look for remuneration, if we look for important positions once we're elected. We have to work together to find the most important issues and make sure that those issues are on the table and that we have a say in how we accomplish what we want for those issues. And for me, when I looked at Trump, what I wanted was someone who was going to do something about protecting us against the installation of any form or limit of Sharia law in America. And I wanted to be sure that women had the chance to accomplish themselves in their careers. And I wasn't so much criticizing his language at the time when he was speaking how many years ago in what he expected to be a private setting with someone who had sort of set the climate for the discussion, which was sexist in nature.
Michelle, thank you for your comments. I appreciate it. Michelle calling in from Montreal, first deputy mayor of Montreal. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. I want to get a couple more comments in here because we're on limited time. Erin is a woman and a soldier, and she writes, "Since the election, I've struggled with my male counterparts and leaders. They tell me Trump's win will make our lives easier, but as a woman, I disagree to my core. I'm afraid as a woman that my gender is going to bring me harm, and I find myself struggling to demand gender acknowledgement in my career. My heart is broken since the results of this election, and it hurts to keep waking up and putting on a uniform, knowing my commander-in-chief will be a man who is so anti-woman." Katrina, calling in from Randolph. Hi, Katrina, your thoughts.
Hi. I wanted to share my experiences being a political photographer, and because of my work, I've been very up close with a lot of the issues we're talking about today. And I've seen gender disparity in the political realm across this country. When I started my career 20 years ago, I was photographing all male candidates. But a lot of women have entered the political sphere, and that's very heartening. But what I'm concerned about today is that the percentage of women running for office has flatlined. And also, for me personally, as a female photographer, you do start noticing the small inequities and workplace discrimination directed at me at times. And, you know, sometimes male candidates feel threatened by women. As a woman photographer, I have to direct them. I have to make comments on their appearance and explain how to present themselves, and they're very uncomfortable with that. And on the flip side of that coin, I got to know a lot of amazing women electeds, and they've really inspired me to be a better self. And they are these women who've had a lot of courage and tenacity to fill these roles of leadership. And those women have really inspired me, and I started a foundation called Power in Place. And it's an organization that tries to encourage the younger generation to see politics as a viable career option. And I'm doing it through stories and positive imagery and role modeling. And the last point I would like to make is that gender equality for gender equality's sake is not enough. And in politics, because of women's unique experience as mothers, as women, and as women in the workplace, they really bring a different vision to the job. And they, because of that, they govern differently.
Yeah, Katrina, I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate that. I said I want to go back to our panel, but we have such interesting people also on the line. So let me just get one or two more in here. Mary's calling in from Newport. Hi, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a college educator. I actually have a master's degree, white woman, and I did vote for Trump. And a lot of people are saying, well, how could you do such a thing? Because of the comments that he'd made so many years ago and some of his attitudes, which I find reprehensible. I'm a sexual assault victim, so I certainly understand how horrible assault is. I think for me, though, when I looked at it, there were many other issues that I had to look at. The Supreme Court mattered to me, and I did not want an activist Supreme Court. And when I heard Clinton's people talk about people of faith having archaic views and they needed to have their thinking adjusted, that scared me because I didn't want my thinking adjusted. So I think there were things on both sides, how Bernie was kept out of the democratic process by the DNC and the media, the way they've treated things, that once again, those were issues that were very important to me because I'm thinking if they would do that to someone who, quote unquote, was on their side, what would they do to the opposition? And when they lost, we saw what the opposition did. They vilified every person who voted for Trump. We were called deplorable. We were called, I've been called horrible things. I've been called a sexist. I've been called a racist. My adopted daughter is black. I'm hardly a racist. And so the fact that I can be called those things without anybody taking the time to understand where I came from tells me about a closed-mindedness that existed on one side. And it's here, those were the things that kind of motivated me to vote not for Trump as much as I voted for the Supreme Court and against the Democratic Party.
Mary, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate hearing your perspective today. And let's now go back to our panel because we've heard from a lot of Vermonters who are expressing a lot of different things. And, you know, you guys have all been thinking about this, talking about these things within your circles, talking about vulnerable populations, which certainly extends beyond women. And perhaps there are populations in this country who feel significantly more vulnerable than women. But a lot to talk about. You know, Hayden, you were sort of signaling a moment ago that you've got something to say.
Quite a few things, but I guess I'll just go with this. I think one issue is that there was so much attention on, you know, the sexism, the racism, the language used in this election, that there really wasn't enough attention given to extensive policy analysis.
I agree.
It was very absent. And so then this election really wasn't about policy preference. It was, you know,
identity politics.
And that was really frustrating, especially in the debates. It was very, very kind of superficial. There was, you know, it was attacks on the other person. It was criticisms of past things. But we didn't get enough information about either candidate's policies. So how are we supposed to really know how they would have governed? And I think that was, I mean, it's hard to do when one candidate has no political experience.
Well, and I think that was tactical, honestly. Yeah. I think that was a tactical decision by, you know, the Republican Party to kind of make it content free so that they could have a shot.
You know, we just heard from Mary, who was saying, I'm a white college-educated woman who voted for Trump, and Mary said, I'm not racist, I am not sexist. Nikki, I'm curious to hear from you, because right at the very beginning of the show, you were saying, you know, all these people who you felt one way about, and then when you see them voting for Donald Trump, to you that signals something about how they might feel about you as a black woman. And I'm curious how you'd respond to what you heard from Mary.
Well, first I want to thank Mary, because not many people have actually expressed, you know, why they voted. I think that's what I really wanted to talk about. I really need to hear from people like Mary, like, what's the reason, so that I can sort of at least feel comfortable that I shouldn't feel so unsafe. Because right now you feel very unsafe. Like, what are these people thinking about me, given the rhetoric that was going on during the election? So I really appreciate that and hope more people do that, because I want to know why. And I hope everybody wants to at least know why, so we know why we're in this particular place. So I would say, ultimately, this whole, it has created such anxiety for me personally and for people like me, that having those conversations are going to be very important. Because we, and unfortunately right now, we're not seeing that from the president-elect. We need to see those kind of conversations occurring where that there is no reason to be in fear. And
but
that's
why, for you, does that, that? Yeah, and does that work? I mean, does Mary saying these other things were more priorities for me in how I voted than issues about race or rhetoric around race and sexism? I mean, does that?
It helps me, because, I mean, everybody's response is not going to be helpful. I thought Mary's response was helpful, because it's legitimate to be concerned about the Supreme Court. I may disagree with whether we should have an activist Supreme Court or not, but that's a legitimate reason. But I certainly wouldn't want, if someone said to me, well, because I think that we should get rid of, you know, Title IX, then we got a different issue. So to me, hearing that she had a reasoned, you know, approach to why she voted the way she voted, certainly does help. I'm not saying that it makes me feel like I'm not going yoo-hee, you know, or anything, but I just think it's helpful. And I think those are the conversations that as a community we need to be having, because, you know, I love living in Vermont. I love what it stands for. And so to me, I feel like we really need to be having those conversations, because we have so many people. I mean, I'm not talking about just African Americans. I'm talking about so many people who are fearful.
Well, and, you know, we just have a minute left as we have this conversation today among the many conversations that are happening. And Rabbi Small and Diane Snelling, I see you both chomping at the bit.
Yes. I just want to say it's so important, having had this conversation and so many others, that we also focus on how do we change this? We have the power to change this in our communities, in our families. You know, we have more answers than we seem to realize, I think, at the same time as we understand what the concerns are that we're expressing.
And I think that means that we have to have a mutual conversation, both from the perspective that you've just talked about, Nikki, that Mary shared, that those who didn't agree with and didn't celebrate the election outcome could hear from people like Mary, who can say, here's what was on my mind. And for the folks like Mary to be able to hear what our concerns are. Frankly, I'm very concerned about Islamophobia and about anti-Semitism and xenophobia. And I'd like to be able to have that conversation together with some mutual understanding about how to repair relationships.
Well, and it's a small state and we're still neighbors.
Yeah, you got that right, Hayden.
I think we need to really focus on the younger generations, you know, at a very young age, start trying to address those unconscious biases and empowering the 16 and 14 year olds who will be able to vote during the midterms and the 2020 election. I think we need to have those conversations.
We certainly do, and I really appreciate all of you having this conversation with us today. I really want to thank our guests, Hayden Cleverly, a senior at the University of Vermont, Nikki Fuller, Director of Equity Affairs and HR for Burlington Schools, Rabbi Amy Small of Ojave Zedek Synagogue in Burlington, Diane Snelling, a longtime Vermont state senator, and Jessamine West, a librarian and advocate. Listeners, carry on this conversation. Go to vpr.net. Tell us your thoughts. Tomorrow on the show, Representative Peter Welch.